Thanks very much. What I want to talk about today is to problematize peer education, and I'm particularly focusing on the actual process of discussion or discourse between the peer educator and the peer, and to examine that in terms of whether it's primarily horizontal or a vertical communication channel. I'm delighted to say there are no financial relationships to disclose. I'm glad they asked us only for financial relationships. I'm going to assume that people here understand what peer education is. I'm not going to go over it. Basically, it's the model that people are influenced by people similar to themselves rather than experts. What I am going to challenge, though, is that the usual assumption is that peer educators translate messages provided by experts into the appropriate language and idiom of peers, and that that is then, if you like, gratefully received. The point I'm making is that the environment in which these messages are taken by peer educators on our behalf is not actually a straightforward or welcoming environment, and that peers, in fact, can and do talk back when these messages are delivered. And this is an example which I think illustrates this and which I draw the title of the paper from. This is a summary of a recording made by a female, African female peer educator talking to a male, originally in Zulu. And the peer educator is trying to convince the peer that the health problem that they're discussing is actually AIDS. The peer responds and says it's not HIV, it's Ugunzula. This is an ethno-ecological disease, a Zulu disease, which is believed that as a result of mixing of blood, of pollution processes, i.e. through promiscuity, blood and semen being different forms of the same bodily fluid, that this is actually the disease that they're talking about. Now, the peer goes on to back this up, switching away from a traditional idiom to borrow some aspects of medical science, and says, look, this is obviously true because of blood groups. When you go for have a blood transfusion, we have to test your blood group because we know if we mix bloods, it's dangerous. And this is backing up my point that this is a disease as a result of mixing of blood. Now, in some sense, the peer educator at this point has a choice. They could go along with the fact that this is Ugunzula because it has preventative aspects. One would have to protect oneself from this just as one would have to protect oneself from HIV/AIDS. But we don't actually teach peer educators to go along like that. We teach them to carry on the good message and to convince people of the allopathic explanation of HIV/AIDS. And she tries to do this by taking on the peer with blood groups. And her response is to say, well, look, myself and my husband, we've got different blood groups, and yet we've had a child together and there's been no problem. And so now the peer then responds back, and the peer is pretty smart, and he goes back into a traditional explanation, and he says, no, because you've got that wrong, because remember, when people are in love and they have sex over a period of time, their blood becomes one. There's a mixing of their blood. And the peer is absolutely right here. What we all know in African traditional beliefs is that if you two sexual partners, their blood becomes one, and we have all sorts of purification rites that we need to go through should one of those partners die and the blood would go rotten in the other. And this ends the discussion because the peer educator, as you can see from the bottom, points out, I didn't say to him that I was confused, but I was confused as to what to answer him, because whatever I was saying, he came up with his opinions as well. So I hope that illustrates the fact that we actually have a very contested situation where peer educators are responded to and that their ideas are contested in quite creative and fluid ways. My own work has been amongst workplace peer educators. There are tens of thousands of workplace peer educators in South Africa. We don't know how many there are. The Department of Labour recommends a ratio of one peer educator to every 50 workers. The company which I did this particular piece of research in, Digco, has approximately that ratio. There's 150 peer educators. I work with 28 of them, and they were participating in an action research project. And what I was really interested in, or what I'm interested in presenting here, is some of the content of the informal discussions that they had. This was a pretty, they weren't a particularly active group. Overall, they were reporting 11 informal discussions per month on HIV/AIDS with other workers or members of the community. That's lower than what we see in other groups that we've worked with. But nevertheless, if you add that up, multiply it by the number of peer educators involved, then obviously there's a large number of discussions taking place. So the question then is, these discussions, how do we actually understand them? And obviously this is a slight simplification, but within the literature and with our understanding of communication, we can think of it as vertical horizontal. The diffusion model, so that Rogers' typical diffusion of innovation, although it's interesting in how ideas permeate through a community, is actually a horizontal model. As Rogers himself says, the ideas that are supposed to be transmitted come from usually professionals with a university degree in a technical field. So we're actually expecting these messages to be transmitted verbatim into a change process. On the other hand, horizontal communication is saying that actually we need to use or we need to think about how people make sense of their environment. And development studies have finally latched onto this. It's a bit of a no-brainer, but it says if you want to go and change somebody's life, well, let's find out what they think about their life to begin with. So we see organizations such as the World Bank very much on board on this, at least ideologically, and working out that how do we have a participatory process when we're trying to seek change in people. Now, peer education can and has been placed in both of these models. So the early work around what we think were very successful peer educator programs amongst gay men in American cities is very much put down and explained as a vertical model. However, others, Lobier and Stoneburner, for example, in Uganda, they talk about the importance of horizontal communication processes in lowering the prevalence rates there. But they don't give much detail on that other than to point to the importance of horizontal communication. As I said, this was an action research project. And what I asked them to do really was I gave them dictaphones. The peer educators that I worked with, I gave them dictaphones, and they used that, and they would record the conversation that they'd had with other peers over a five-month period. And we had about 300 recordings in a range of languages. We also had a series of workshops which were allowed for discussion. And then I interviewed 23 of them at the close of the recording part of the project. So here's the action research project. I agree they're not looking very active there, but there were times when it got quite hot. Dictaphones, you've all seen a dictaphone. Nice thing about cell phones is that these things are not intimidating to people. And there's a small group discussion. They're working on the myths that they've encountered and possible responses to it. Okay, so it's an incredibly difficult environment in which peer educators work, and I think this is an example of the kind of conversations I've had many times, unfortunately, with peer educators. This was an HIV, openly positive HIV peer educator. This is not usual, but it happens. And she's talking about a colleague, a neighbour of hers, that they both went to the same support group. And for reasons that she explains in more detail in the interview, the neighbour decides that the ARV are not working and that she chooses to follow a local traditional healer who offered to cure AIDS. And the result is both the woman and her baby die because they go off ARVs. And this, of course, is extremely frustrating to peer educators who are working alongside people and yet losing them to these alternative explanations of HIV/AIDS. And just right at the bottom there, you can see it's painful. I helped that person when she was too sick. Then when she's okay, she hears other people. So the point is that peer educators are working in an environment in which there are competing messages of HIV/AIDS that are in actual real contestation and can indeed often do win out. So peer educators in fact labour under a great number of difficulties, and I've pointed out to three of them here which I think we can go through. I'm not going to do them in detail apart from the last. The first is that we shouldn't pretend that just because we put a peer educator through a five-day training session that somehow that their worldview has completely changed. And elsewhere, I've tried to work out on this, that in fact peer educators remain, because they are peer educators, embedded in many of the health beliefs of their peers. And that's something that complicates a process of dialogue. Peer educators' character and past are generally known, and this can be held against them. You know, the wonderful thing about giving a talk is that I can give a great talk about what you should do, and I can hide the fact that I may well not live up to that in my private life. That's not available to peer educators because they're talking to their neighbours who have seen exactly what they've been doing over the last 20 years. And so those reputations are things that can limit the perceptions of giving the correct messages. And then I think we have to recognise, and I think this has not been done, that there's actually a lot of topics in HIV/AIDS are extremely tricky. They may be explicable in a fully scientific paradigm, but if you're working with people which don't have a basic understanding of biology or science, then these are things that can be very confusing. The one that drives peer educators nuts is discordant couples. They are constantly told, they must tell people, if you have unprotected sex with an HIV-positive person, you will get infected. And they then have to respond to peers' questions, well, what about discordant couples? It's not easy, and your credibility, frankly, is not very good if you can't explain that. We also have to recognise that scientific messages keep changing and swapping around. Up till fairly recently, the message was that if you're on antiretroviral drugs, you needed to wear a condom. If you're HIV positive on antiretroviral drugs, you must wear a condom having sex. 2008, that appeared to be reversed. It was said that under certain conditions, you can have sex without a condom. Now, more recently, we seem to be getting a reversal back against that. So the problem is you're expecting peer educators to deal with both tricky topics and to promote messages that are constantly changing, and that undermines credibility of peer educators as they're engaging with peers. So what we can see is in South Africa, where I think we're really ahead and we're developing, especially within the workplace programs, the sort of the techniques of peer education. And here I'm just drawing on three examples of where we can see a vertical model of peer education in which peer educators expect to verbatim report an expert message to peers. They're problematic. The first is that you end up with a hit-and-run situation. Peer educator coordinators are not stupid. They're getting the feedback from peer educators. Peer educators are saying, I gave this message, but they answered me back. And one of the responses to peer educators, don't worry about that. Just give the message and get out of there quickly. And obviously, this is very good for monitoring and evaluation because you can tick off that I had contact with so many peers. But frankly, your credibility with somebody, if you refuse to answer their question, is zero, and you're not actually going to get anywhere. We're also trying to counter rather the Maruti problem, the preacher problem, Maruti preacher in Sesotho, and this is really the inappropriate use of front stage, using Goffman's idea, front stage performances in backstage space. The point about peer educators is that they can go behind the traditional education process. But unfortunately, the church, the school, and indeed our own training programs teach them to stand up and preach to people, which is not an effective way of communicating with peers. Finally, there's call the expert or call the friend. We constantly tell our peer educators, if you don't know the answer to this particular question, I'll go and talk to the sister, and I'll come back with the answer for you. And that sounds wonderful. And it's fine if you're both working in the same paradigm. When I make my students go out and be a peer educator with their peers, i.e. other students, they have no problem sitting down with a textbook together because they have the same beliefs in the validity of the textbook, the scientific textbook on the biology of HIV/AIDS. But if actually you're in competition, because actually you're talking through a peer to a traditional healer or a spiritual healer or a racial conspiracy theory, saying that I actually have to go and talk to the doctor to find the answer is deeply discrediting. It basically says, I'm not competent on this, I must now go get the right message to go and tell you. So this is a diagrammatic model of the two forms that I think we're implicitly working with. I must say, it's much less impressive than many of the models that I've been seeing at the conference. But here is the traditional idea, experts to peer educators to peers. What I'm suggesting is that we should be slightly rethinking this. That what we actually should be interested in is the dialogue going on between peer educators and peers, and that really is where we should be focusing as experts, and that we should be looking at what the discussions actually are and reorientating our messages to intervene within those ongoing discussions. Now, I'm not saying that this can be a completely horizontal process. You know, there are allopathic facts about the biomedicine of AIDS that we can't allow just to go into a subjective discussion between peers. That I take on board. And I also accept that if we have peer educator programs, then there is a need to train peer educators by experts, and that there's a vertical component to that. Nevertheless, what I'm trying to point to is that we have to be seeing these debates and work out how we actually support peer educators who are trying to engage with them. What I think that means is that we would develop much more sophisticated and much more nimble strategies, but I think the obvious point is that these would be much more difficult than simply having educational modules that we tell people to deliver. These were some of the things that I thought would be interesting and point to. These are the kind of grassroots, horizontal communication, educational strategies that I saw peer educators attempt to engage in, without the support, I should say, of the peer educator programs, by and large. The first was that they would realize that they needed to work on harm reduction. I mean, that to us is not surprising, but we don't actually tell peer educators to think about harm reduction. They have one message, the allopathic version of HIV/AIDS, go out and win it. But what peer educators realize, in a complex situation, maybe they should be thinking about harm reduction. And the particular example here is that peer educators neither like traditional healers nor do they like spiritual healers, but they start to weigh up these ideas. Well, at least spiritual healers are using blessed water as a medium of healing, and that's a lot better than various muti compounds, which often are used to induce chronic diarrhea as a sign of the strength of the medicine, which is obviously not a good thing for someone whose immune system is compromised. The second idea is walking in the wrong way until we get tired. And this comes from one of the many conversations I've had with peer educators who talk about how they've accompanied a peer to numerous traditional healers and spiritual healers, and indeed often private doctors who are no better whatsoever because they're willing to do lots of tests for lots of things, but not to confront the fact that this is HIV that's the underlying problem. So my question to them would be, well, why did you go to all of these traditional healers and so on alongside, waste all that money before you actually got them to go to a test, if it's a positive situation, if you actually get them to go to a clinic? And this, I think, was a very nice condescending response to me. Because, Prof, you know, when someone says, because, Prof, you realize that you've made a mistake. You have to satisfy someone. It is his opinion to go to the traditional healer. We have to walk that way until we get tired. Then I'll come up with my suggestion after that. He has to go first and satisfy himself that this is not working. And what the peer educator is saying is, if I go in and say, listen, the traditional healer's not going to help you, you must go to the clinic, I lose that person. That person's going to go to the traditional healer and they're not going to talk to me at all. I have to follow that person. And when that person gets despondent with the traditional healing not working, now is my opportunity. I can say, let's go to the clinic and try and see if we can go this way. And the particular peer educator here was very optimistic because just shortly before we'd interviewed, the guy actually had come to his house and they'd agreed to go and test. The last one here was a recognition by peer educators that the realities of life need to be incorporated into the messages. And I think, you know, it's an important lesson that we need to grasp. And there's two aspects that you can look at it. One was about condoms. I mean, it bugs me that we seem, the messages we give around condoms is say it makes no difference. You know, just put the condom on, slip it on, it makes no difference. And it's just not credible for peer educators, especially in male circles, to say that the condom makes no difference to sex. It obviously has enormous implication on pleasure, on intimacy, on spontaneity, and so on. So what the peer educators are saying, look, we support condoms 100%, but we can't sell them if we pretend that they're not a problem. So we have to say, yes, of course there are these issues, and this is how we might get around them, but we have to wear them. And the other one was sexual attraction, the idea of faithfulness and so on. Again, many of these peer educators are deeply committed into monogamous relationships, but they're saying, listen, don't pretend that we're not attracted to other women, for example. You've got to accept to people, yes, you will be attracted, but you have to remain monogamous. So it's an incorporation of our own experience to make the messages realistic. So then finally, in conclusion, what I wanted to say was that whether we like it or not, although I think implicitly we assume that our peer educator programs are vertical in nature, actually, whether we like it or not, horizontal aspects are happening all the time. And that peer educators, or at least the good peer educators, are actually active change agents. They're embedded in local contexts, and they're seeking to promote a realistic dialogue with their peers, which of course is a process of horizontal communication. So what we need then is what we need to be examining is that, and I think if difficult as it is, if we don't, we're actually going to have inappropriate messages. We're just parachuting messages that have no relevance to the debates that are actually raging within the target, our supposed target communities. So effective communication requires not only a message and communication skills, those are both important to work on, but an understanding of the context in which those things operate. So what happened, what I think we need to do is think about this node, the peer educator to peer node, very intensely, and look at exactly how they are competing claims over the meaning of health and illness within that. And what I haven't talked about in this presentation, I think is very important, is how these actually align with social tensions, whether they be over race, over class, over belief in traditional healing, and so on. And then I just think that if we don't actually examine this, we're going to continue with what clearly is 25 years of failed HIV education in Southern Africa. Thank you.